Hey, welcome to the Pachanga and Possibility Podcast, the podcast where we celebrate the power of healing and transformation. I am your host, Natalie Calzadilla. Each week, I'll be interviewing experts that will inspire you to discover your soul's purpose and create a fulfilling life. I'll also be sharing some spiritual coaching along the way and personal adventures as I enter this new phase in my life as a mother and entrepreneur. All right, mi gente, grab your cafecito and a notebook. Let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of Pachanga and Possibility. Ooh, I have a delicious treat for you guys today. I have on today's show Hopi Shaman D'Alva Ward, and I brought her on to speak about the Hopi prophecy because it's said that that's kind of what's going on with the crazy energy on the planet right now. Some debate that it is and some debate that it isn't, but I want you to hear firsthand what this Hopi prophecy is and what it means to us because we all have something to do with it. We also talked about in this episode about what it means to be two-hearted versus one-hearted, what's the best way to approach life, what are the common imbalances that are happening right now with people, what can we do to come into right relationship with Mother Earth, and what does that mean? Along with applying some very practical tools to help achieve the self-love and coming into right relationship with the earth, and just so much deliciousness. I mean, I actually was blown away about how deep we got and just all of the information. Her name that she goes by, Earth Mother Wisdom, is the name of her website, and it is very appropriate because she was dropping wisdom bombs left and right. Just amazing energy. So let me read you her bio. D'Alva Ward is a Hopi shaman from Arizona. She is known as Earth Mother Wisdom in her spiritual community. As a spiritual teacher, she incorporates her techniques based on her cultural and spiritual wisdom into her healing work and intuitive readings. She shares her Native American wisdom through lectures and workshops about spiritual connection to Mother Earth to bring balance in a modern society. It is through these teachings she helps you empower yourself, create individuality and authenticity. She believes as you become balanced mind, body, and spirit, you begin to live a truthful path in alignment with Mother Earth and humanity. I met D'Alva while I was living in Arizona, and she gave me phenomenal readings. She is by far the fastest reader. I mean, she would just put her hands on my head and it was like the fastest reader I've ever encountered and probably the most accurate also. I mean, and her thing is very life purpose oriented. It's just so much wisdom and information that she can connect to. And I only had two readings with her, but they left such an imprint on me because I've had readings with many other people and they've come and gone and I've forgotten them. But her two readings stuck with me so much because they were so powerful at the time. And till this day, really, I still reflect on them and they continue to guide me. I also had attended one of her shamanic drumming events, which was delicious. So she's just an amazing human being. So without any further ado, here is D'Alva Ward. Welcome, D'Alva, to the show. I am so happy to have you here today. Please tell me a little bit in your words about yourself.
Well, I am a Hopi shaman from Arizona. And my cultural roots come from Old Araibi, Arizona. It's from Hopi background, and that's one of the reservations I'm from. And Hopi is translated into the peaceful people in English. That's what that means. Hopi is a Hopi word, and that's kind of what we call ourselves. And they're distributed by clans. So my clan is actually Badger and Butterfly Clan. That's what I belong to. And each clan has a significant part of what they caretake for. And so Badger Clan is actually a healer clan. So we're kind of like the medicine people of that particular clan. And different mesas have their own clans, and they tend to have different caretaking for whatever clan they have. So that's just kind of where I come from. And the reservation that I'm from was Old Araibi, Arizona, And it's one of the oldest indigenous inhabited Indian reservations in the U.S. We don't have any electricity, running water, plumbing, things like that.
Till this day?
To this day, yes.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Tell us about the Hopi prophecy, because what brought it to my attention is that it's people have been mentioning it a lot because of everything we're going through since 2020 began. And I just wanted to learn more about it and see what are the parallels between these times and what the Hopi prophecy says.
The Hopi prophecy is tending to come out now because there's been a lot of signs that the prophecies have been showing, and it is interpreted by many different people. Some people say we're in the times of prophecy. Some people say we're not even there yet. It just depends on who is interpreting the information. When I talk to audiences, I remind them that the things that they read in books that people have written have different meaning. And these things have been written back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And in Hopi way, when we speak and we say something, it's very difficult to translate. And in that translation, it gets lost because even the meaning has to come from the sound and the vibration. So one word can mean multiple different meanings, depending on the tone, the vibration, and who's saying it, because we have different wording for men and we have different wording for women. So those vibrations are all different. So in those, back in the history, the translations could actually mean different things, but that's just what we read in the books right now. But the most common one that most people know is about Hopi Prophecy Rock. It is actually less than a mile from my reservation. It's on this little hilltop that we have. And in this particular prophecy, there's many, many prophecies that we have. But the most common one is the Hopi Prophecy Rock. And it has to deal with the two-hearted path and the one-hearted path. And if you've ever seen Hopi Prophecy Rock, it does depict two paths. And these paths represent what I, in my personal opinion, is we're beginning those stages in the last few years. And one path of the two-hearted represents having our hearts in our head and having our hearts in our heart. And we're having this internal war as individuals and conflict within each other. And being in this state causes frustration, it causes anger, it causes conflict, and it causes war, not only within ourselves, but on the outside world. And then there's the second path, was the one-hearted path, which means we walk in heart-centered. And we're seeing a lot of light workers that are being brought in to the light through dreams, through personal connections with other people who are in the light. It ignites people. And when it ignites them, it lights them up. And they start having, through their meditations, ancestors from indigenous cultures starting to lead them what I call breadcrumbs to be able to go and search for who is this Hopi? Where is Hopi? What is Hopi prophecy? And these people are being led into that distinct feeling of, I must go there, I must be there. And when they go to this place turns something on in these people, and they go home, and this ignites them into fulfilling a purpose. And it's changing the world by the impact of their own light. That's one of the most common ones that's happening right now.
Now, when these people, when you say when they go to this place, are you, do you mean in the astral or physically to the Hopi Prophecy Rock?
They're actually both. I've gotten people contacting me where they really don't have the ability to meditate. They struggle with the meditation, but they keep hearing it. They keep feeling it. They feel guided to go there, and they go there and they come back changed differently. I've heard other people who have never been there, but have gone there through astral. They would look up photographs online. They would see pictures of the Prophecy Rock, and they would sit in meditation, and they actually have gone there through astral.
I see. The Prophecy Rock is the image that has the two paths where it splits, and then the top paths has the the engravings of the men on it, the little people, and then the other one is the one-hearted. How is it known that that's what those carvings mean?
In the beginning, we've had people who were the caretakers of these sacred places. And those people were the interpreters. And we've always translated our creation stories and passed them down through lineage to lineage. We don't write them down in books, but they're being story told to from family down generations. And it's talked about in sacred ceremonies with different head of clans, different chiefs from different reservations in the Hopi section. So they all gather and they all connect, and they've keeping this history by passing it down, mentoring or family to family, generation to generation. And it's just part of our culture and our history.
I was doing research and I saw that in part of the prophecy was they started explaining the prophecy by explaining your origin story. Can you share a little bit about that? Because I saw the part of the story where the Hopi people were underground. What was that story?
Yes, we believe that we were in the third world, that we were at the other side of the third world, was underneath the Grand Canyon. And there's a sacred spot in the Grand Canyon called the Sipapu. And it, to us, it's like the womb of Mother Earth. And we look at that as her sacred room because we crawled out of there. There's a hole in the ground down in the Grand Canyon. It's preserved and protected by sacred rites. So it's gated up and people can't go down there. But you can get close enough to actually see it. And we do have hikers that hike down there. But in this sector there, it was told that we were destroying our third world through greed. And because we were getting greedy, it said that we were going to destroy the third world, which we did. And those chosen were going through to the fourth world where we're at today. And we were giving another chance. And, you know, our creator said, we're going to give you another chance. And in this place, you're going to wander the earth. Don't ever claim any land. Don't claim any animal. Don't claim anything until you're guided to, meaning spirit was going to talk to us, connect us when we were going to do that. So as we came out, we wandered all over Mother Earth until we were guided to go to some of these places to visit and, you know, do different things. And that's how we developed the clans. Certain clans went different directions. So not everybody went pilgrimaging through one way. They were all connected with spirit, and spirit says, okay, you're going to be called this clan, you go that way. You'll be called this clan and you'll go that way. And we all moved all over Mother Earth. And that's why we're so connected to different indigenous tribes all over the world. And we know about similar things, and other indigenous places have similar connections as we do because we were once there. So these are those types of connections that we have on the other side of the world that we connect with. In this sacred spot is something that we create kivas. And it's a simulation of the Sipapu where we do sacred ceremonies in these kivas. And in the kiva, we have an altar that is called like the Sipapu as well. And that is always that connection to Mother Earth, always reminding us of where we came from and reminding us what we did to the third world where we destroyed it. Now we're in the fourth world, and the stories that have been told is if we are not caretaking for the earth like we're supposed to, then the world is going to be destroyed like we destroyed the third world. And the creator was going to give us symbols and signs to show us we're leading up into that. And that's where we had all these other prophecies that were showing us where we were guiding into. And that's why Old Araibi has been one of the oldest inhabited villages that refused to have any running water, refused to have electricity, because that was also part of the prophecy, is if we were to take into those things, we would destroy the heart of Mother Earth as caretakers. And that's why the elders never allowed outsiders to come in for the longest time. They didn't want any influences of the white man's ways, because we knew in prophecy, if we did, we would destroy ourselves.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. The symbols that they describe, have any of the symbols come to happen recently?
All of the ones that are known on the internet that have been showing has come to fruition. But there's the last one, which is the blue star Kachita, and everybody has an interpretation. Everybody has their idea of, has it happened already? Has it not happened? I get a lot of contacts from many people from all over who's claiming that it has happened. But as significant as the other prophecies were, this final one is not as significant as the others. So for me personally, my belief is it hasn't happened. Because the first few prophecies that happened were undeniable. You know, one of the prophecies was the roads were going to be made, you know, the dark snakes were coming, which was the roads. Mm-hmm. People that were going to bring the cattle, you know, were going to come. Those things happen. I mean, these things were undeniable. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at the final one of the blue star Katina, that is actually supposed to have a blue light, was supposed to fall from the sky, and it was going to be a representation that we were at the final, what people would call the apocalypse. It would be, that was the end. This is the end of the fourth world, was going to start beginning. But we haven't seen anything like that. There has been some talk back in the 90s where there was something blue that fell down in Australia area. And that's why there's a huge portion of people believe that it did happen. There has also been brought up recently, I think it was in the last 3 weeks, that there was something blue that fell from the sky in near Hawaii. And I've been contacted recently in the last few weeks about that as well, questioning if have any of the Kachinas have taken off their mask in ceremony. And the answer was no. You know, nothing like that has happened. So it's not quite really impactful enough to be able to say this has happened. Has any of the elders have said it has happened? I have not heard that one yet. But there are non-natives who are interpreting it that's saying it has happened.
I see. And what is a Kachina exactly?
A Kachina is a spirit being that we invoke into ceremony. These are our guardians. Some people will call them angels in the white man's way. For us, we call them spirit beings. They come to us. Different people would translate them as star beings. And these connections come to us as our caretakers, our healers, our guiding systems. You know, people would call them deities. They go by many names, but they're spiritual beings to us that help us in our habitat where we live and survive. And we pray and we honor them through ceremony during our cycles that we have.
And when you say that they haven't taken their masks off, what does that mean as far as the prophecy?
The prophecy says that if there's a living station up into the sky, some part of a living station where people lived upon is going to fall from the sky, and it's going to show as a blue light. And people are going to call it the blue star Kachina. And they're saying that the blue star Kachina is going to dance in ceremony and take off his mask. And when that happens, it's going to reveal that we're at the end times of the end of the fourth world.
I see. So it's supposed to materialize in ceremony, and this is mm-hmm. supposed to happen. I see. So that hasn't happened. Okay.
No. But in the books that you read, mm-hmm. there's only so much can then be written. And there's also things, too, that people don't understand is a lot of the Hopi people are not telling the full story either, because we're not supposed to. It's even though you get bits and pieces of the story, we're not telling the full story itself because that's something sacred that we keep. We're told not to tell those things because if we tell them, then we break down that power of what's supposed to happen and occur. So It has been written in several books about Hopi prophecies, but there are a lot of things that have been left out of it.
I see. That makes sense. Now, when I'm thinking of the rock and how between the two-hearted and the one-hearted path, clearly there's a lot of two-heartedness going on, right? Mm-hmm. And how can we become more one-hearted? What is it that we can do?
I do believe that we must be two-hearted to begin with.
Okay.
A lot of people tend to feel like they need to always be one-hearted. But I do think like on every life lesson and journey from the time we're born, we must experience life itself. So we must experience both sides in order to know what side we're on. So there are people who are going to be the two-hearted path. And you must learn from that experience because that's where wisdom comes from. And once you gain that wisdom, then you lead on until the one-hearted path. But we have a lot of spiritual people who are on that one-hearted path. And sometimes they feel insecure about stepping out, fulfilling their life purpose, putting themselves out, being vulnerable, exposing who they are so that they can shine their light, so they can help others who are on those two-hearted paths to find their way into that light, into that heart center. And that's what's important. So even if you find yourself being the two-hearted pathway and going through that personal journey of spiritual growth, that's okay. It just means you're just a little farther behind than others, and some are a little further along than you are. But the whole point is we must experience humanness and spirituality, because our humanness is going to lead us into that spiritual pathway.
Have you seen any themes occurring with people when it comes to the struggles right now that's keeping them from being more one-hearted?
Yes.
When it comes to like their healing and transformation work, like is there these general themes right with their clients?
Yes, it is. I see a lot of struggling with stepping into their path because they're being guided to do things completely outside the box. And when people try to do something new, they try to look around to see who's doing what and to see if, okay, so-and-so is doing this, I can feel comfortable doing it too. But part of being a leader, and especially a spiritual leader, means that you're going to go first. Nobody's going to be doing it the way you're doing it. That's why you're supposed to go first. And I get a lot of people who come in having these great ideas and have these, you know, trying to fulfill a purpose, but they're so afraid to step out because of fear of judgment, insecurities. And I'm sitting here saying, this is what your life is supposed to be. Part of being a leader is going through that beginning stage of feeling a little insecure, but moving through the fear as well.
It's so true. I know I've personally have struggled with that, and it's taken me many years to step out and step into my power and really go on this path that is not very common. And I know you were cheering me on the whole entire way every time I got a reading.
Yes, I remember from the very beginning that I could see your path, but you couldn't quite see it yet.
Can you believe that was 8 years ago?
It was a very long time
ago. I can't do math. 6 years ago. 6 years ago. That is crazy. So grateful, though, that you were shining that light for me. And even when I moved back, you sent me messages and were still cheering me on. And I'm really grateful for that. Now, when it comes to coming into right relationship with the earth, what can we do?
Is first start to find the self-love within ourselves. As much as I see so many people focusing on trying to heal Mother Earth, we forget she's gone through her trials and tribulations millions of years ago. She's gone through, you know, the Ice Age. She's gone through, you know, destruction, the destroying the planet, you know, the the flood. She's gone through so many things in her lifetime that she's always overcome, and she's never really needed our help. But what people don't understand is the help that Mother Earth needs is for her children, not actually the earth itself, but her children. So the things that need to be caretaken for begins with ourselves. If we can learn to love ourselves enough, have compassion and understanding within ourselves, we emanate that out. We become the walking examples of how other people should be. And we start to treat them with love and compassion. We begin to handle people who are angry and frustrated in a compassionate way. You know, we, in a spiritual way, we look at that and say, I wonder what they're going through. How can I help them? How can I be of service? Versus dropping down to that low vibration that they're at. We give them that lift up, that boost, and saying, I see your pain. I see your hurt. How can I help you? You know, that's key. And if we all did that and we all gathered together, then we can begin changing and caretaking for each other, which leads into caretaking to the earth as well.
That's beautiful. And I didn't expect that answer, but that's wonderful. It's true. If we love ourselves first, then everything, that ripple effect comes out. If we're going to care about ourselves, then naturally we'll care about the earth as well. We're going to see that love and divinity in everything. What's something practical that someone can do to begin loving themselves?
Is it looking at where's the fear? You know, we really need to take a look at where's the fear? What illusion are we telling ourselves that's keeping us from moving forward? Because that's where we need to have a lot of love and compassion. And I tell people, I said, we are a bunch of little children right now. Some of us are like the five-year-old throwing temper tantrums because we don't want to change, or we're being told to sit still. And when we learn why we're upset, and when we learn why we get scared about things, you know, anything fearful, we get afraid because we don't understand it. But the moment we begin to understand it is when we can have a lot of love and compassion for it. Our faults that we have, our insecurities that we have to understand where did it come from. And when we learn to know where it came from, then sometimes we know we can let it go because those fears were either bestowed upon us or we created those fears for ourselves.
What's a tool that a person can use to start looking at these fears? Is there a spiritual tool that you recommend?
I recommend a lot of meditation, but not everybody can do that. There are a lot of people who do struggle with silencing themselves. One of the two things that I really like, because I'm also a person who struggles with meditation all the time when it comes for me personally, on a personal level, is a journaling. Journaling is one of the biggest things because we give a voice and a power to how we feel, and we validate those emotions. And that's all what our emotions really do want, is for us to validate them. So just like the five-year-old who's throwing the temper tantrum, all they really want is attention. So the moment we journal, we'll find that the original starting of why you were journaling is really going to lead to some healing that you didn't even realize you needed healing on.
I love that. It's true. I love journaling. It's definitely one of my favorite activities. And when I don't do it, I miss it. And it does help transform so many emotions. And you just get your own insights. Yes. By the time you're done writing everything out, you're like, oh, and a lot of things are revealed. So yes, that's your meditation and journaling. Now, let's say someone has been doing pretty good in the self-love category and they want to work on their relationship with Mother Earth. What are some things that they can do?
Creating ritual. That's one of the biggest things that I like to recommend is, and it doesn't have to be any particular ritual. Ritual just has to be basically something repetitive, something that you feel that you're honoring. There is no right or wrong way to do it. It's just what feels right to you. no need to look up on the internet or no need to look up on in a book. It's whatever you feel guided to do. If you feel it just has to be repetitive for you to manifest something of what you're searching for. And whether it's gratitude or whether it's healing or whether it's searching for prosperity, whatever guided that you feel doing is something that you create ritual on. And with that ritual, we have to be consistent. It's a discipline. And I think that's one of the biggest ones that I encourage a lot of people to do is ritual of some form. And it doesn't have to be from an indigenous path or a cultural specific culture that they have some sort of ritualistic ceremonies. It's just we can create any simple ceremony, whether it's just simply every day in the evening sitting by a fire and journaling. That is considered being a ritual. It's something that you do on a regular basis.
I enjoy ceremony so much and doing things in a sacred way and taking the time. And for the first time this year, I did a journey to spirit to see if I can receive a New Year's ceremony for myself. And it was wonderful. And it was way more powerful and potent than me using something I found on the internet, which actually was from a book, which was also fantastic. But this one just carried so much more weight and magic. And interestingly enough, that you said discipline and consistency, what they gave me was a ceremony that I have to do on a monthly basis at a minimum. So it wasn't like a one-time event. It was like, no, you're going to go do this at least once a month. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. That is interesting. I hadn't seen it that way. So I love that you just connected those for me.
Yes, I have unique ones as well. Last year I was guided to do a ritual with tea. So I on my phone, I have a specific time and every day at that specific time I have tea. And it's almost a point where spirit comes in for me, not necessarily to work with everybody else that I work with clients. But this is actually something for me that I get insights for myself. So there are many different ways of ritual that spirit will guide you to do. It's whether it's working with art or it's clay, and maybe you're doing it a specific day or specific time all the time. It's like almost inviting them into your sacred space.
So you mentioned during when you were explaining part of the prophecy that humanity would start learning, or maybe this was something I read in the research, learning more of the ways of the Hopi and just learning more of those sacred tools and that becoming more of the white person's like life.
I've heard the same thing. It's been different places. People would talk about it. So yes, I understand what you're asking. It's being called now because our society is out of balance. Our energies are completely off. So naturally, just like Mother Earth, when something happens on her and it brings something out of her, the ecosystem, something will always adapt to create balance of some sort back into where it needs to be. Well, we are in the mirror image of the Earth as well. So all of us, as human beings currently, are all off balance because the world is in state of fear and panic. They're in survival mode and they're stuck there. They're not supposed to stay in survival mode for very long. So what's happening is there is an imbalances that are occurring in our emotions. And when we do that, that fight or flight chemicals in our body is spreading all the cortisol inside our body, and it's causing so much stress and strain on our internal organs, and it's actually depleting our bodies. So, you know, nature has a unique way of building things back into balance, and it works with the psychological consciousness of human beings. So in our dream state, or through spirit, whatever you want to call it, we're going to be guided into nature teachings of some sort. And it's being guided into what you know. So maybe you hear about history of different types of of indigenous tribes, we go straight to that. Because if spirit were to simply say, connect with earth and bring balance to yourself, we're not going to understand. So instead, the universe says, okay, gravitate to this indigenous culture because they have the wisdom to teach you what you need to know. Not necessarily you have to do it exactly like they do, but they want you to understand the importance of the balance of nature and human beings as ourselves. So a lot of people who've been called to the Peruvian, South America, the different types of cultures, and they're going out there and connecting with that culture, then they're bringing that energy and that essence back. They're being called out to Hopi Reservation to connect with the indigenous ways. And it's really just a sense of learning about it and getting back to nature, which is traditionally our culture is simply to be caretakers of the earth. And when you look up what a Hopi person is and you look up what our culture and spiritual pathways are, you know, these are the things that is just simply trying to get you to do again. It's just a reminder that, you know, we play a big impact on the world, and it begins with ourselves. If we start to focus on releasing material stuff and focusing on the importance of humanity and interacting, because in Hopi culture, we don't talk a lot. We're all about action. So we don't have words to say goodbye. We don't have words to say hello either. We are just a beings and caretakers of how we know another person feels or what they need is based upon how we act and behave. So much is said in our actions than our words.
That's really powerful. I had never looked at it that way, especially explaining how we're not going to know how to connect with Earth. So naturally, we're going to gravitate to someone who has a nature-based practice. And that makes so much sense. Now, how is this received on the other end? Because I know that some indigenous tribes are okay with this and some aren't, because I've noticed that shamanism is in style, it seems like, and it's gotten, and I hate to say it's in style, but it's very commercialized now. It's very popular. And I even had somebody reached out to me on Instagram, and they were asking me about a mystery school that I had gone to, and it's a shamanic mystery school. And she said, you know, is this good or not? Because everyone here in LA is a shaman now, and it's just super trendy and fake. And she was just like concerned whether this was one of these like Beverly Hills shamans or if it was the real deal. And so how should a person who really has pure intentions like navigate this conversation?
Okay. I've got this question a lot, and it is very trendy. You see it a lot. I don't talk a lot about it because I also have this judgment as well. And I'm native. I'm full-blooded native, but yet I get judgment by my own people.
Barely.
They do not like me teaching to non-natives. Even my dad has had difficulties with me doing my work and doing healing work with non-natives. It is still considered out there very taboo. There are a couple of things for me that is, you know, something that I have to overcome is, you know, I am connected to my reservation. I have a house out there. I grew up there during the summers, and during ceremony times, I was always out there. Did I live 24/7 out there? No, I didn't. My grandparents were products of boarding school, so they wanted white man's way of living, so they lived in the city. And they wanted their children to be educated. They wanted them not to struggle. And so that's kind of where I did. But every time we would go out during ceremonial cycles, for every ceremony, I was taken out of school. I would miss a week or two of school so that I could partake in ceremony. So I did hold my culture. Now, when I got to be an adult woman and started asking questions, even as a child, I was so intuitive. And when my uncles would go to ceremony. They come back. I could, I'm empathic. I can feel their energy. I can feel what they're thinking, what they were doing. And I started asking questions and I would get chastised about it and I would get in trouble. So I ended up getting initiated a lot sooner than most children did because I knew things that I shouldn't have known. And when that started, it began a cycle of distancing because what I was doing was wrong for a couple of reasons. The healing work is only done by men on Hopi. They don't like it that women do healing work. And so I was suppressing that. I also was educated. That also was a white man's way, so they looked down upon that as well. And so now that I'm exposing more and more and being seen in the public eye, there are my own people not happy with what I do. They see me as being turning my back on my culture. I bring shame, different things like that I've heard, and I've had that connections and I had confrontations with people, and it's been very hard. A lot of people out in the reservations, most of the elders are now passing, and there's a different generation now. My generation is now considering elders now because a lot of the elders are gone. But what we're noticing is with the traditional ceremonies, because we haven't been living on the reservation for a long time, and a lot of us have gone to school and come back, we don't have those sacred connections to those ceremonies, and they're actually being created and ended in ceremony now. Some ceremonies are not going to be done anymore after that elder is gone. And there's turmoil out on the reservations as well for power. So when an elder's gone, somebody's got to take over, but yet there are still elders saying, this isn't genuine. The heart isn't fully where it's supposed to be. So they would prefer ending it than trying to pass it down to another generation. And that's also one of the prophecies that has been foretold, is that we were going to end ceremonies. And that was going to be the beginning cycle of what we were going to have to deal with because our hearts were walking the two path instead of the one path. So for us as Native Hopis, we were always supposed to walk the one path. But again, a generation, when it came through boarding school and then their children's children, it destroyed that path and created two paths. And some have come back and some haven't. So to have people who are non-Native coming out there looking at Prophecy Rock, there are a lot of people who are not happy about that. They don't like that they're trying to take their culture. They don't like that they're trying to seek a medicine person. And the sad thing too is, in every culture, in every place, there are good people and there are not so good people. There are Natives out there that will take advantage of non-Natives. They will charge obscene a lot of money just to teach them something, and they will teach them stuff that is not true. They will teach them portions of things, but they won't teach them the whole thing. Like if I were to be taught, they would teach me the whole thing. But if it was a non-Native, they would only teach you part. They would never teach you fully the full craft. And that's really sad. But I do try to teach non-Natives as much as I can because I feel there is a need. I do feel that there are our ancestors coming back in non-Native vessels so they can make change in the world. That is my feeling and that's my interpretation because I meet so many people who can go out to the reservation and they know things without even being taught. And this isn't something they're taught in books or class or anything. Their hearts are just like, I've been here before, and I can feel it. And it is one of the most overwhelming experiences when I have been out with other people who are non-Native and they connect to the earth and they only have to be there one time and they go off and they take what they know. And I try to encourage people, if you're feeling drawn to Indigenous way, you're not really being drawn to a specific cultural preference. You're only be drawn back into humanity's beginning time. We were all nature-based people, no matter what color our skin was. We were all nature-based people from the very beginning, and we're only going back to that. So don't worry about what tribe. Don't worry about going to ancestry.com and trying to find that that 0.001% of Native to give you permission to be Native. You are Native. You're indigenous to this planet. That's the original tribe, was humanity. And when people start to see that, they will start getting away from the labels. They will start feeling like they can take ownership of what's inside themselves.
That is beautiful, Dalvo. Thank you for saying that. And for, I feel like you're giving us permission to do this and to seek that information from a place that's of like purity, of coming back home. And when you said that you believe the non-native, that the natives are coming back and reincarnating almost in as non-natives, what an incredible concept. Of course, that's possible. For me, it was a very bizarre experience because I didn't even know what shamanism was until I was introduced to it by another woman who was introduced to it also now probably 30 years ago. And she passed away a few years ago and she studied, and I just learned about it through this spiritual community I was in, and it resonated so deeply. I mean, it was like a switch went off, and I was raised with Catholic / Christian, depending on the day, mom. And then my dad was atheist. And I kind of flip-flopped all the way growing up. And then I was finally atheist for a while. Then I opened my intuition by learning about angels, and that I vibed with for a while. But when I touched on the nature-based stuff, which was closer to shamanism and not nature-based as in goddess types of, I guess, religions, it just was so natural. And then I was going through these experiences while I would do these shamanic journeys. And then I would read a book about journeying or about different things. And then I was like, oh, I went through dismemberment. Oh, I went through this. Oh, I went through, and I was already experiencing all of these different things without any training. And then I would go to training and be like, oh, okay, I've been going through. So it was just crazy how it just naturally it clicked for me. So it's just, it's in my heart somewhere in my makeup. I don't know how it's in me.
We're part of the earth and it's in our DNA. And I always tell everybody, I said, if you're feeling guided to it or you're feeling it, it's because it's awakening in you. All the information you ever needed in your lifetime, it lies within you. You just have to trust it. You know, a lot of people don't have to take classes or read a book. If they would just trust what they're feeling inside, they would find out that they're so indigenous to this earth that they will start create their own ceremonies. That's why I've been trying to encourage people, don't get so hung up on a label. Don't get so hung up on the word shaman. Create an own phrase for yourself, you know. Think outside the box, create your own healing techniques. You know, this is so important. I'm seeing it more and more. We get trained in one thing, but it leads us into another direction. And you create your own way of doing things. I mean, we're, as human beings, we're highly intelligent. And we have so much information from past history and our past lives that we're pulling forward into the present moment to create who we're meant to be today. You just have to trust it. But I warn you that there are people who will take advantage of people who don't know and they're desperately wanting answers. And I say, if you're wanting to pay thousands of dollars for somebody to tell you, to give you permission to be who you are, I said, I'll do it for $25 and I'll even throw in a photograph with you. I always say that in all my lectures, you know, be warned. When somebody's charging you obscene a lot of money for that,
I've seen
knowing that what's inside you should not cost you anything. You know, maybe you need a little help and guidance with understanding what you know. Because I get a lot of people who want to be mentored. I said, I'm not going to teach you what I know because I can't. I'm me. There's only one Dialva board. But I can help you figure out who you are. I can hear all the stuff that goes on in you that you're ignoring. And when I talk to you about it, you're like, you're putting it to words so easily. I said, yeah, because you're not listening. I said, when you listen and you silence your mind, you can hear it. And I said, a lot of times I'm just validating what you already know. That's just so gotta trust it.
I always wondered why you didn't have mentoring programs. I'm like, why is she like all the other shamans that doesn't have her own mystery school and isn't like doing what you typically see lately? And
the reason for that is people who create all these schools, it's about money and it's about greed. And Hopi people say, we don't take ownership of things. And I don't take ownership. I can only take ownership of my actions and how I do things. But to teach a school on all this stuff, it's just not me. I feel like if I can help you by just one email or one phone call, then I've done good. I don't want people relying on me for session after session to learn something when they already know it within themselves. They just have to trust what they know. Maybe you need some understanding to how the balances of earth and energies and things like that may be, but your own healing techniques and your own intuitiveness is something only you know. It's like a specific language that is created just for you.
And what do you say to those who, like, to the teachers who have to eat, right? Like, when it comes to charging, it's always like, is it the poor monk mentality, or is it we charge for all what we've gone through, or
you try to eat? Yes, we don't get paid like we did back in the old days, where the medicine man didn't have a family, lived outside of the village, because they're always communing with spirit all the time. And when we were to seek a medicine man, we would talk amongst the community and say, okay, what does the medicine man need? Does he need firewood? Does he need food? And we say, no, I just took him a sheep. All right, I'll take some firewood. So we would take care of them by bringing what they needed, and that was exchanged for services. But we don't do that now because we're in a modern society now. And a lot of practitioners and healers that have their way of helping people, they struggle with the fee. They struggle all the time. And I am also guilty of having the issue in the very beginning. I said I would only get 50 cents a minute when I first started. And I was excited about it. And then there was a point where I was not excited anymore. And I tell people, you charge what feels right for you. It's charging for your time. That's what it is. It's your time. We don't take ownership of the channeling that we bring because we're the vessel. We're the willing vessel to channel in that information for the person in need. But what we charge is our time and the extra stuff that we do for other people. You know, you may be making them a medicine bag. You may be giving them papers to take home so they can study. Maybe you're giving them guide sheets. It's the information where you have to sit down and create an information sheet or a booklet or a packet. That takes a lot of your time and a lot of energy that you have to put into it. Doing simply videos, doing all these things to expand our teaching to other people, that costs money. But we also live in a lifestyle where we have to have a roof over our head, pay our car and our insurance. And we don't have, you know, the universe doesn't give us that special health care benefit either. So we have to pay that ourselves. So I tell people, you charge what feels comfortable. And then as the time goes on, you'll know when it's time to change that pricing, because it won't feel okay when you're working. You'll feel out of balance. And that's how I ended up growing into charging to what I charge now. You know, like I said, 50 cents at the beginning, it felt great. I was excited for the $7.50 at the end of the week. Now it's like, I can't pay anything with $7.50. So I don't charge obscene amount of money, but I do charge for my time. And I just encourage people just to charge what feels comfortable, and people will be gravitated to what you need to know. You know, if they feel that they can do that. But I never turn anybody away. That's my thing. You know, I have a specific set price. But if there's somebody who can't afford it, I work with them. I also do the traditional payment too. I take a pound of rice, a pound of beans, a loaf of bread, fruit. Those are the things that I take because I need to feed my family and I also need to feed myself. So that's also an exchange. Oh, and a case of water. Those are the necessities. Yeah. You know, we need those things. So if people can't afford to pay my prices, that's kind of the other traditional pay that I do with people. But I don't turn people away.
How do you work with people? What are your offerings?
Currently, because of COVID, I have a strict policy with people that come in person. They have some questions they have to fill out with the same COVID questions everybody get. And I still see people in person. I'm not doing the shamanic sessions that I used to do because that requires a lot of breath work. It requires a lot of other things that is too close with the client. So I don't do that right now, but I am doing a lot of stuff over the phone or over Zoom, doing a lot of readings, a lot of interpretations for people, long distance sessions, those things that I do. I still do that over the phone. And I do spiritual guidance a lot. I have done monthly packages for people as well, which just seem to be a little more cheaper for other people. But to get that package would be once a week. They'd get an hour of my time once a week. And then they can email me anytime. They could text me anytime or an emergency they call. So we kind of work together on that. So there are different type of packages I have. But the biggest one that I've been working with now is life purpose readings for people. And that one seems to be a really big hit right now because people are kind of lost. They don't know their uncertainty. And to give that grounded foundation back on their path again, then they get, it's like, I call it the little cars that you pull their wheels back and then they let them go. So that's kind of what that reading does for people. It's like, oh, we pull you back into center. And then now you let you go and then you fly off and go do what you need to do.
I remember those cars. Those were great. Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time and for being here. Where can people find you?
They can find me at my website at earthmotherwisdom.com. But I'm also on YouTube with D'Alva Ward, Hopi Shaman. That one's very common. But I'm also on Instagram at earthmotherwisdom. And then I'm on Facebook as D'Alva Ward, Earth Mother Wisdom. So
great. I will put all of that in the show notes for everyone so they can find you. And thank you so much. I hope you have an amazing, wonderful year. Thank you for the light that you've been in my life. And I'm just so grateful for you.
Thank you for having me on. It was such an honor.
All right, guys, it's a wrap. Thank you guys for being here. I know that your time is the most valuable thing you have. It means the world to me that you're here. There are many more cool episodes coming, so go subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If this episode inspired you, please leave a review so this show can reach more people who need healing. Thank you for being here. I love you guys. See you in the next episode.